Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning, August 16th, 2017, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have quite a panel for you to discuss quite a day and events that have happened. And we figured, well, let's all sit around a table while we still have a country and talk about them. Why not? Let me introduce our panel to you. It is a delight to have you with us. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, if you would like to get in on the conversation, and we would love to hear what you have to say. And I don't think it's going to surprise anybody, but we'll probably spend most of the morning talking about the president's press conference yesterday, or whatever that was, in the lobby of Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan yesterday. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, the real morning, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant, and she joins us several times during the week, and we're thrilled to have her here.
Delighted to be here. Thank you, Joe.
Mike Spain was with us yesterday, and we said, hey, Mike, you love your seat. You love sitting there. Please come back.
I'm here.
And you're here. And we're thrilled that you are here. We also welcome, for the first time on our program, and we couldn't be more delighted, Professor of Law at Albany Law School, Donna Young, is with us. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning.
How are you? Very nice to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
For us on the panel and for listeners at home, give us a little bit of an idea of your expertise and background. It's fascinating. Are you Canadian?
I am Canadian.
Yeah, you're a Canadian.
But I'm also American. I have dual citizenship, yes.
You have dual citizenship.
Yes.
So so you have an out.
I do.
So, like, what side of the negotiations are you on?
Wow. Good for you. So with the Canadian perspective,
yes.
We go to Donna. No, so tell us a little bit about your background and your fields of study.
Sure. So I teach in the area of criminal law and employment law. Those are my two main areas. But I also teach federal civil procedure and gender and work seminar. And my area of research interest is critical race theory, feminist theory. I do a little bit of international law, but with a focus on American civil rights law.
Well, we are thrilled to talk to you this morning. And obviously, we have a lot to ask you about some of these very large questions that we're going to be tackling this morning. Alan Chartok here as well. Did I already introduce you? I guess I did.
Yeah, you did.
Apologize.
Remember I said the real
morning joy. Yes, I did. But thank you. It's you know, I can never introduce you enough. You know that.
I couldn't agree more.
We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. All right, we'll talk about what happened yesterday, and that is the president gave a press conference yesterday. You remember Monday was supposed to be a press conference, and then that wasn't a press conference, and everybody said, oh, that wasn't a press conference, and he said, yes, that was a press conference. And then yesterday he was supposed to just give a statement, and then that ended up being a press conference. And in a combative exchange with reporters about the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, President Trump drew the very moral equivalency for which a bipartisan chorus had already criticized him. He certainly seemed, and I believe did, take a complete flop to what he had said the day before in a statement, which seemed to be given under duress. Perhaps even a hostage situation, as many have described it. He talked about that there are both sides. You'll remember on Saturday in his initial reaction to what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, he talked about many sides to blame. Yesterday, he referred to it as both sides in Virginia, and what are the both sides? Well, there's the alt-right. He called the so-called alt-right, then going up against the alt-left in the clashes. There was also the comments regarding the statues that were under question. He said that there were good people at the rallies, both on Friday night in Charlottesville, as well as during the violence on Saturday. We should note there was no mention of the victim of Saturday's violence. There was no mention of her name. And he also made a very big deal about permitting, which I thought was odd, because apparently, if as long as you have a permit, you're allowed to take a car and run it into people. Whether that was what he was saying, I don't really know. That was odd. And then also, which we'll get into a little bit later on, about the statues themselves and about the fact that this all started from the removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee, which he felt many people feel is quite important, and asked if statues of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson are next. Okay, so a lot there, I know. So we will just go around the table and kind of dig in and start and see where we end up. Alan, your response to what happened yesterday?
Well, you know, it was appalling. It was terrible. I mean, this is the president of the United States, the so-called leader of the free world, basically glorifying, and I'm sorry to say it this way, but glorifying the so-called alt-right or the KKK. I mean, can you imagine a president, any president of the United States in history doing that? That's off the wall. Not only that, his talk was filled with half-truths and truths and the way that he usually does it. And he doesn't seem to care that there's a new poll out this morning, yet another poll showing him at 35% in popularity. He is sinking like a rock. The only thing I can say, and then I'm going to shut up, is that I think he has been listening to Bannon. I mean, to me, you can watch this thing waving between his staff, you know, Kelly, all these other guys, and then he goes back and Bannon says, "Okay, boss, but you're gonna lose." Do you remember Jiminy Cricket? He stood on one side of Pinocchio's on the other guy. There was the good one and the bad one, and that's what it is here. He goes back, Bannon tells him, "You're gonna lose because that's the way I got you to win, boss."
Meanwhile, there was a. He said that Bannon wasn't a racist yesterday, and then he also really distanced himself from Steve Bannon and said that we'll see what happens with him. So that was also another headline from the press conference yesterday. Donna, what do you make of it?
Well, I think that he's incredibly consistent in his inconsistencies. He likes to do that. He'll say one thing and then he'll contradict himself if he starts to think about it too much, if he feels like he's being pushed by people to, and I think you're right, it was kind of like a hostage situation, although I don't want to belittle hostage situations, but it was...
Well, seemingly it was done under duress.
I mean, I do. Yeah. I think that, and I think a lot of commentators were saying the same thing. When he feels like he's being pushed too far, he'll go back and revert to his original statement. I think a lot of people saw him as angry and acting out and kind of like a petulant child. But I think calling Donald Trump a petulant child is an insult to petulant children. I think he has expressed no leadership, but I do think it's important also to see his attitude about the alt-right as extremely consistent with his pre-presidential with his campaign, and that's why he was elected. Let's be very, very clear about this. He was elected because of those dog whistles and his professed racism. And his racism is not anything new. We've known about it, you know, since the early 1970s.
Could you explain one thing to me? Because I heard it while watching TV. This business about the dog whistle. I have to say that I am. Very naive about it. What does it mean?
Well, a dog whistle means that he'll say certain things. We all do it. Yeah. He's an expert at it, and I think that the people that he surrounds himself with are experts at it. He will say something, and it'll mean something else. So
code.
It's code. For example, welfare queen is a dog whistle. We know what that means. It seems race neutral, but we know what gender welfare queen means. That's a single black woman on welfare. So I think when he talks about immigrants, he's giving us dog whistles, and it's racial code. When he talks about the alt-right, that's it's kind of a nicer way of saying white supremacy. It's a dog whistle, but I think there are lots of examples of that.
During the campaign, he was talking specifically to the African-American community and asked the question, what do you have to lose?
Yes.
It seemed like yesterday we all got the answer to that, which is...
Yes.
We have everything to lose.
Absolutely. There's a lot of discussion about how he could possibly say this and how, he was revealing his racism. I think we also have to remember that what was happening in Charlottesville was a real physical threat. It wasn't just an ideological thing that we disagree with, but there were people... Not just the people in Charlottesville, but we all, people of color now, have been under physical threat since he was elected. We our security has been undermined through his election. There were hate incidents went way up right after his election, and they haven't really stopped. There was a really interesting account by a rabbi in a synagogue in Charlottesville. I don't know if you read it, who was really afraid. You know, he describes watching outside the step of the synagogue, watching what was going on, right, and feeling at any minute there would be danger and physical violence at his synagogue. That's what it is.
And obviously what we're doing now... is what the president, what the administration seems to be doing, is perpetuating it, to allowing it and to in some way normalizing it as if it's an activity that is sanctioned.
Well, you know, equating the so-called alt-left, which, again, you know, he...
And what is that?
Nothing.
I mean, we can talk about that, but what is that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Whistle.
I don't know. Yeah, I think Teresa, yes, it's probably another dog whistle.
Teresa, can you talk a little bit about, there is some stunning video that has come out that showed what was happening on Friday night specifically, and it is some of the most disturbing video that I've ever seen. It is produced, but it is of that moment and of what is happening. Talk a little bit about it, and of course, how it counters what the president was saying yesterday, is this was a bunch of nice people who were upset that Robert E. Lee, who meant a lot to them, his statue was being taken down in a park.
Right. So Vice News put together a report about Charlottesville, a reporter, and I'm sorry that I just don't know her name off the top of my head. Do you remember? I don't remember her name.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Could you look it up? I apologize, because she was amazing. This is amazing, probably award-winning journalism. Now, I will say as a caveat, this is not for everyone to watch. It is extraordinarily disturbing, so you may not, you know, it comes with a warning when you go to YouTube. There's a warning that says it's disturbing, and it truly is. But what it does is this reporter just travels with some of the leaders of this event, the Friday night march with the tikis and the Saturday event, and follows this one man and then others through the whole time, from him, the fighting, the car incident, and even in the end back to his hotel. And it really shows you about the level of rage that these group of neo-Nazis and white, self-proclaimed white separatists have, what their views are, their hate for anyone who isn't white, their hate for their anti-Semitic views. And I really think that the President of the United States needs to watch this. Anyone who watches this will understand completely that it's a total, if they had any doubt before, you watch this and you realize what an incredible false equivalency it is to compare those people who organized this rally in Charlotte with the predominantly peaceful people who came out as was their right to stand in against what they this hate. But we have a problem in this country, and with this level of rage, we need to understand what causes this rage. And our biggest problem is that we have a president who, Donna, you're absolutely right. I mean, he fomented this. He campaigned on this. He built these folks as part of his base. This is the base that Breitbart News, I mean, their Breitbart News is their communications of record. And the Mercers funded that, and they funded Bannon to do that. And the president embraced that, and he's fomenting it. And it's fomenting extraordinarily divisions in our country that we need to pay attention to.
And so here's this anti-Semitism that is so blatant that, as Donna says, the rabbi was afraid. And they were talking about, don't let Jews take our jobs. You know, this was one of the chants. And there stands Jared Kushner and Ivanka, both of who are self-identified Jews. And they don't react in a negative way to Trump's defense of these people. It's unbelievable.
And in this news piece, one of the people goes after the president for allowing his daughter
his beautiful daughter to marry that Jew.
That Jew. I mean, it is
as well as to convert, by the way.
It just it's just stunning that this. I mean, I would be interested in hearing from some of our listeners who are World War II vets who fought against the Nazis and who are, you know, family members of Holocaust survivors. How are they feeling about this? I think that we need to be reminded of our history right now. We need to be reminded of Nazi Germany and what it meant to fight against Nazi Germany.
Elle Reeve, by the way, was the name of the reporter at Vice.
Boy, had amazing job. Amazing bravery.
We are going to take a break when we come back. Hey, Mike, we'll actually let you talk.
Hey, I'm ready.
Okay, great. We'll let you, you'll have the first word when we come back, I promise. We have Alan Chartok with us. We also have Donna Young, Mike Spain, and Teresa Bourgeois. We will continue our conversation on the roundtable this morning after news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Not surprisingly, we have a lot of letters, so if you could please help us in getting to as many as we can, keep them short. Don't write in more than once a day if you've, once a day with iron. And don't include links, because we certainly can't click them or click them on the air. And proofread them before you. No, that's right. Proofread them before you send them, because Alan's going to be reading them on the fly and wants to actually be able to convey what your thoughts were. I promised that when we went to the break, that when we came back, I would allow Mike to shoot him out of a cannon and let him comment on what transpired yesterday and your thoughts.
Well, very quickly, because we do want to hear the letters. I was only going to add to that yes, it was a surprise to the people around the president, I believe. And that's been reported that his closest aides did not know that he was going to engage in a exchange with the news media and take questions, and that his intent was to go down, talk about infrastructure and making things happen better, because that's what he's good at.
Boy, that picture of General Kelly is great, isn't it?
It's remarkable.
It really makes
you wonder.
Because it just shows him sitting in the corner with his hands folded and his head down, looking like, oh my God.
Yeah, this clearly,
you know, like much of the nation.
So right. Who quits?
And did you see that the head of the Marines tweeted yesterday,
yes,
which was astounding.
Yes, that the Marines is not bigoted. They accept all people and they honor everyone's rights, etc. Why would a military leader be compelled to tweet that yesterday?
Well, Kelly and the others around him are mostly Marines, right? He's mostly surrounded by Marines.
Very many Marines.
That's why it was so.
Right. And I think that an interesting side to this, and I think what you guys spoke about was more important, the way that the president's remarks are dividing the country and the way that he's emboldening people who are white supremacists and who share these neo-Nazi feelings to come out. And that's a serious problem. And we have to look for ways to combat that. And just screaming louder and yelling back, it has to be done, it has to be denounced, but what now? What's next? And I think there needs to be some leadership here on that.
Go ahead. I was going to ask that. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the narrative for the fact that you guys were mentioning in the break that white women voted in overwhelming numbers for Trump. Is this does this go back to what we're witnessing now, which is we've got to protect our white women, the sort of Southern thing, that narrative that we saw with Emmett Till and all the rest of it? Is this you're shaking your head, so I think you don't think so.
No, well,
you teach gender studies, which is why I
do.
Asked you.
Right? No, and to tell you the truth, I've been really struggling with that question. I'm not quite sure what accounts for it. I guess I wasn't as surprised that white women voted for him in higher numbers. I think that, you know, for the most part, we live in an extremely segregated country, right? We live in a very segregated city. Albany is very segregated, and that's very typical of the U.S. model. And so I think white women's family members and neighbors, and I mean, whites are with whites and blacks are with blacks. And by the way, that was in much part federal policy to require that to enforce strict segregation. So I don't think it's a choice necessarily of blacks. I think that was really by law. So I think that white and black, white women and white men are talking to each other, right? I think it might be as simple as that. And I think some of the prejudices are very apparent in that voting.
But didn't some of the exit polls say, I was checking back in the numbers, 53% of white women supported Trump.
That's right. But 49% of educated white women. Right? 49%.
But some of the exit polls said that they did two things, that they did not want Bill Clinton back in the White House,
right,
and that they felt that there'd be chaos, and that you know, there are just so many attacks on her, and it would just be chaos, and they wanted people to focus on the issues.
And do we know why? I'm sorry, folks. Do we know why they didn't want Bill Clinton? He was a harasser.
It's the equivocation thing. You know, he was regarded as a sexual predator. Arguably, he was, and that scared people, and they saw Hillary's return, or Hillary's election, as the entree for him to be back in the White House, throwing his bravado.
But let's remember.
No, that's a narrative that was used.
But and yet
to
they throw
people.
Away all of the video
the
and
Kyle
the
Bush
Access
tapes.
Hollywood.
I know. Yeah. I mean, right. There's not logic here. I'm saying that was the narrative, and we could do hours on what went wrong for the Democrats and how Trump got elected, and a lot of people are, but that's not what we're here for. There's so many things. That was just one of them. I gave people the excuse.
Donna, you were going to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that too. I'm not sure that it was the sexual predation of Bill Clinton that motivated white women to vote for a sexual predator. And by the way, I don't say that lightly, right? I mean, I do think that I teach criminal law, and I was teaching gender and work at the time of the election, and I asked my students to look at New York statutes, and I said that if what Donald Trump said was true, in those tapes, those Access Hollywood tapes, if what he said was true, has he broken any laws? And I showed them the criminal law statutes, and I say, which one of these laws might he have violated?
And what'd you come up with?
Yes. I mean, absolutely, you know, unwanted sexual touching, right? Grabbing women. Absolutely. That is a criminal act. And when I say sexual predator, he was bragging about doing this to many women, right?
Yes.
So I'm not, it's hard for me to say this about the President of the United States, but I think his statements themselves lend to that.
Well, and there were many statements leading up to that in interviews that he had given on many shows over the years, well before his political career or official political career began, where he would be bragging and so forth and make very similar comments. I do want to quickly get back just for a second to, well, not just for a second, but to get back to what happened yesterday. This idea of equating the anti-racism protesters with neo-Nazis, the legitimization of that, of white supremacists, We have never seen anything like that in our recent history, have we?
Well, we don't see it, I think, in such flagrant forms. We see it in much more subtle forms. So
certainly not by a president of the United States or by a government as a whole. Go ahead.
I don't think so. I mean, I know, you know, in the past, of course, we used to see that all the time.
Woodrow Wilson was a member of the Klan.
Exactly. Yeah. We had Supreme Court justices member of the Klan. Right. Hugo Black was a KKK member. So we definitely see that in history. I do think that there's that message of that false equivalency that's
what I was going to ask you about. Right. It's really false equivalency.
It is a false equivalency, but we do see it in the form of what we call formal equality, which is a very American model in the legal system, and that is treating certain speech as exactly identical, treating the races as though they have been absolutely identically treated in the past, and not recognizing the systemic discrimination and systemic racism that this country was built on, right?
Right.
When he talked about George Washington being a slave owner, I think that's really important. Our country was founded on a lack of equality. Our Constitution protects slavery.
But yet we need to understand the distinction between Jefferson and Washington.
Absolutely.
And Lee.
I agree,
that's the problem, that he
and
did
Stonewall
not
Jackson.
And that he did not make the distinction right. between the two of them.
Right.
But I think this notion of false equivalency, Mike, the media, I think, was engaged in quite a bit of that during the campaign, I would say.
The media was engaged in making false equivalencies. So as soon as there was anything negative about Trump, the media would report that there was something similarly negative about Hillary, and therefore that's a wash. Now let's just go on. You know,
right.
I don't know about that, Teresa. I don't know if the media was doing that. I think there were people and politicians saying that. The media reports it, so now they're blamed for it. Trump says the media, he attacked the media frequently yesterday during his press conference, you know, yelling out fake news and fake journalism and all that. And he, there is a difference between a commentator on an MSNBC show expressing his opinion and the news media reporting in a balanced way with documentation of what's going on. And I think the journalism that happened, the documentation of what was going on with Trump during the campaign, it was calling out false equivalencies. And yet commentators on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, and anywhere else you want to flip on the dial and find were expressing their political views, and they were perhaps guilty of making false equivalencies. But I think the media, the reporters covering it, and the decent quality news organizations like the networks and the New York Times, the Washington Post were outstanding in their presenting of it in an equal and balanced way. And I think anybody who read that thoughtfully would understand it. People weren't reading that thoughtfully, not enough.
Wait, can I ask?
Yeah, can you hold it?
Yeah.
We'll hold it. We'll do a break, come back, and we'll get to the question. We have a lot of letters, too. I want to get to all of those. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back. And thank you very much for being with us. And we appreciate you joining us. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Teresa Bourgeois. Mike Spain from the Times Union. And our newbie, Donna Young. All a professor of law at Albany Law School, and a great pleasure to have her join us this morning. Thank you. We have a lot of letters, so let's start going through them.
Okay, here we go. Anthony writes, the white women who voted for Trump, if they were to vote for a Democratic woman or Republican woman, for that matter, are they afraid of being labeled a feminist? Anybody get that? I don't get that.
I do think a lot of people shy away from the term feminist, but I don't think voting for a woman necessarily makes you a feminist.
I think you got to remember the Comey press conference just before that sunk her numbers, and people were afraid there'd just be years of fighting and litigation as opposed to governing.
Right. Okay, again, as Joe has pointed out, you not only have to, you know, not put links in it, but you have to read your stuff before you send it, only because sometimes it doesn't always make sense. Okay.
Right.
Dave says, my 92-year-old mom, a World War II Navy vet, said Trump was like Hitler a year ago as she watched his rallies on the news. She said it reminded her of newsreels in the 30s. A dear friend who survived the camps by escaping not once but three times used to comment that his father, a businessman, until Kristallnacht, violence destroyed his shop, was caught totally unaware as Hitler went after them. Jared reminds me of that man. He will die unaware of his surroundings. He is that dumb. And that's from Dave. Please feel free to comment, guys.
I think we need to...
Go ahead.
The story of the first part, I think that we need to hear more of those stories now and be reminded. I think there are a whole lot of people who don't understand when they say they're neo-Nazis, really what that means. And I think we need to hear the voices of veterans and the voices of Holocaust survivors and their families right now so people have a better understanding. Right. And go back to history.com and read. I've been linking people to that instead of remember. I think we need a refresher course in what it means so that there won't be... So when Trump makes this false equivalency, people hear it and say, no, you're not right.
Our regular correspondent, Julius, who may get the award for the most letters written, has written to us today and said, Stephen Miller is also Jewish, but has a long history of racism and bigotry. And why isn't he saying anything about the anti-Semitic commentary of the white supremacists? What's going on here?
Well, can we hold there for a moment just to talk about... oh, my God, where are the Republicans? Where is everybody?
They're quietly chipping away at civil rights laws.
My God!
Well, Paul Ryan got out in front of this one today and was the one sort of example.
Now, as of this morning, Mitch McConnell still had not made a statement. Is that correct?
I haven't heard anything.
I hope he's waiting till his wife resigns.
Well, Mrs. McConnell said she wants to stand between both of her, stand for both
stand
of
by
her
both men. Her men. Yeah. Yes.
Just for people who don't know, Elaine Chao is the Secretary of Transportation, also married
who
to...
Who stood alongside the president yesterday and wasn't...
That hurts me to see people being used like that.
But how do you... Because even the responses that came, and I heard a lot of this on the news programs last night, that even people who were... Who said the right things? There was a lot of
wiggle room.
Well, it was felt that it was tepid, and very similar to kind of the original statements that the president gave on Saturday. That you say, okay, racism is bad, but nobody named the president. Nobody said that this is a false equivalency. Nobody really dug in there. So I will ask I'll play the stooge and ask the question of
never
if this doesn't. I mean, we've talked about this a million times. And I know Alan has said 20% getting into the 20s, but good Lord, if this doesn't turn people and this doesn't get people thinking about what is right and wrong versus a political agenda, then what the hell will?
Well, I think it's really important to understand what the Republicans are doing. They have to own this. What Trump said was an overt expression of really troubling racist ideas. The Republicans, meanwhile, and I said this kind of, under my breath, what the Republicans have been doing has been a systematic dismantling or an attempt to dismantle civil rights laws, right? With the Voting Rights Act, intervening in civil rights cases where they are trying to reverse the EEOC interpretation of sex discrimination to remove trans people and LGBTQ from protections. What they are doing is, it's very easy to tweet out if you're Paul Ryan, we condemn all racists. When you're your political agenda is to dismantle civil rights laws that were there. You know, we now know that Jeff Sessions is going to go after affirmative action. Affirmative action By the way, a lot of people don't know this, but affirmative action is constitutionalized in many other democratic societies.
Right.
Right? Canada has constitutional protections for affirmative action because of the recognition of a lack of equivalence between people of color and white people, historical equivalence and treatment and systemic-wide. So, I mean, I think the Republicans are trying to have it both ways, right? Just, you know, whenever Trump says something outrageous, say, we don't agree with him. But then very quietly behind the scenes going through their agenda and using him to distract from what they're doing.
But what if Trump's numbers go up?
They might very well.
Yeah, that's what I wonder. What if his,
he was, I think a lot of people voted for him precisely because he was saying this kind of thing.
And I think the North Korea situation was scaring people and his numbers were dropping. And, you know, this, I don't know if he did it to help solidify and strengthen his base. But it certainly has the potential. One hopes it doesn't, but it certainly has the potential because he's, you know, there are, as Hillary Clinton said, there is a small group, a basket of deplorables, you know, and I think those are the neo-Nazis. But there's another group of people who are the economically disaffected. And, you know, they've lost their jobs. They feel they're not getting a fair shake. And he plays into their fears. And that's one of the things, that conversation yesterday where he talks about being on their side, as he did all during the campaign and at all his rallies and such. But this is where, you know, I think the media and other people need to step in, because it's not true. If you look at his budgets, you know, he says, I care about the cities. There was two interesting stories in the New York Times yesterday. There's a report going to come out today in New York City about the number of homeless children. 100,000 homeless children. It's just astounding. And what are we going to do about that? There was a second report in the New York Times yesterday about the city of Hartford. And in one of the wealthiest states in the country, Connecticut, the city of Hartford is near bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And because of the tax structure and such. And if you look at the solutions to those problems, and you look at Donald Trump's budget, you know, his budget's going to exacerbate both of those problems. And both of them are partly driven by this growing economic gap we have in this country.
Let's go to a few more letters before we go to a break in just a moment.
Alexander says, good morning.
Good morning.
What is the next step logically? We ended up killing the Nazis. How can a disastrous cycle be prevented? More importantly, who will lead us? We know who it won't be. And that's from Alexander. Virginia says, there were men of conscience in early America. I believe George Washington's will stated that his slaves were to be freed after his or Martha's death. And there were others in power who did the same at that time. Anybody?
That's true. My point earlier about Washington owning slaves and what that means.
Sure.
I mean, that's absolutely true.
And point well taken.
Right. But we do have to remember that the United States, history is intricately intertwined,
sure,
with racism and slavery, and that's inherent in who we are.
And at Monticello, Jefferson, they are altering the Monticello to clarify that history. You know, they're making changes.
We're
right
seeing
now.
That. Yes.
Now,
recognition.
I mean, recognition.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
which
so
is very important.
It's really important because now they're before they hid that history, but now it's being discussed. And it's part of what people are learning about.
I think recognizing the flaws and recognizing exactly what you said, Donna, the inherent racism that was present when this country was founded and continues and continued in the law, and now those laws are being rolled back, is important. Reconciliation can happen with the truth. I mean, we can learn from South Africa, you know, truth and reconciliation. We don't have to punish everybody who has something in their past. We have to recognize it and then go forward. And we need leadership on this. And I'm not seeing who's leading us here. I don't see the Democrats stepping up. The Republicans, we know, the Republicans are doing exactly what you said, Donna. They're you know, saying they don't agree with racism, and then they're, you know, engineering this destruction of the civil rights laws and the environmental laws and the banking regulations and the, you know, you can go on and on and on that continue the
Not to mention health care, and
it is economic. It's racial and it's economic. There's enormous divide economically and racially that is not being addressed.
I'm sorry, we're going to take a break. We have to take a break, and we're going to get a news break. And when we come back, Alan has a, I'm putting my fingers about an inch apart from one another, and that's about as large a stack of letters we have. So we'll get to those. We want to hear from folks as well, we promise. You write to us, we'll read them, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a great panel this morning, and we have a lot of letters, and we'll get to those in just a moment, I promise. Panel at WAMC.org. Two quick things. One is that we've been getting a lot of letters from people. We were talking about a Vice News feed that is being played on the cable news stations quite a bit, a clip. But if you wish to see the whole thing, if you just put in your Google search Vice News, you'll see it'll come up Charlottesville Race and Terror, and the video is readily available there, and you can see it.
But you've been forewarned. It is very graphic.
But it is troubling, and they warn you at the beginning, but a lot of people have asked and want to see it and want to know more information, so that's that information.
But also, Joe, we got a letter that I know you want to read.
That's right. Sarah wrote to us from Williamstown and said, thank you for inviting Donna on today. Please hire her full time. She is wise and knowledgeable, a good listener, and has a captivating way of expressing her intelligent insight succinctly. I asked you during the break if you knew this person.
Are you related?
So a lovely way, and
thank
we
you,
couldn't
Sarah.
Be more thrilled to have you here.
She is so right.
So with all of that said, let us go to the letters, and go ahead, Alan. You got a lot of them.
Thanks. Tom, sitting in the park, in parking the car in front of me, has two bumper stickers. Not fooled by the media. Mass media breeds mass deception. What's happening is just not the South, and that's from Tom in Gloversville.
Yes, it's not just the South. That's absolutely correct, and we need to understand what's going on. We need to have a national conversation.
Peter says, dear panel, yesterday is the day Trump made himself radioactive and drastically reduced the number of people who will even be associated with him, and that's Peter from Beacon. And when those guys left the Manufacturing Council, Trump made it clear he could get more. That's what he said.
Well,
I can get more.
And he can.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of businessmen who want to, you know, elbow to elbow with the president to push their own industry.
Yes.
Sure. They don't really care about the broader issues.
What will be the voices here to discuss these very challenging issues? Where is Congressman Faso? Where is Congresswoman Stefanik? Where, you know, each of you in this, I know there are lots of members of Congress who are represented and the people listening. Have you checked to see what your member of Congress thinks about this, what their conversation is going to be? And as Joe Biden said, it's not just their words, what's in their budget.
You know, that's a great story. That's a great story, not only for Mike, who sits here as the associate editor of the Times Union, but also for Ian Pickus and our wonderful news team to call all those people and say, what's your deal here?
Right, not just their words, which will be important because words can heal, but also what's in their budget? Are they really going to support these drastic cuts in HUD? The CBO report came out yesterday, Congressional Budget Office report on health care, that if
devastating.
It's devastating if Trump does what he says he's going to do and not make the payments. You know, where are these folks on these issues?
You should explain not make the payments, what that
I'm
is.
Sorry.
The subsidies to the health care programs. Basically, part of Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act is to provide subsidies for people who can't afford health insurance in certain parts of the country.
And that's given to the insurance companies.
Right, and it is given to the insurance companies that provide this insurance. And if the president reneges on providing that, which there's arguably he has the authority to do, although some attorneys general are challenging that, it will devastate the program. It will collapse.
The premiums will soar 20% or more. The deficit will soar, and the number of available plans will be reduced.
Mary says, Mike's observation that people don't read the news thoughtfully overlooks the fact that we're being fed different versions of the news depending upon what websites we visit.
Well, go to the right website.
Well, exactly.
No, not the right one. This is the far right one. That's Breitbart.
Go to the correct website.
This is the same old false equivalency. They've systematically and ideologically divided us in order to give themselves more power.
I need to address that, though. I think people need to read thoughtfully. I think smart people can understand when they look at the sources that are being cited in stories and whether comments are being attributed and whether assertions are being attributed, to understand who is doing this well and who is not doing it well. And the brands are out there. Among them are the New York Times, the Washington Post. I mentioned the TV networks, Atlantic Magazine. The Wall Street Journal does an excellent job covering the news.
Read the Guardian. It's
I
fantastic.
Think the New York Times does an excellent job. I think the Times Union does an excellent job. I think you need to read thoughtfully, look for attribution, look at the people who are being quoted, see what stature they have, and make judgments. I mean, it's an active, lean-forward kind of thing. You just don't flip on any dial on the cable and say, oh, that's the news? You really have to be thoughtful.
I know we have a lot of letters to get to. I just want to ask this question, though. What do you think happened from Sunday to Monday to Tuesday in the White House that would bring about, so you have the backlash, and then you have that statement that is given on Monday, which now looks so ridiculous because you have a wooden, awkward president
who is reading from a teleprompter,
and I mean we use the term hostage situation, but just looking under duress, and then you see him in his true self.
Yes.
Yesterday, what do you think happened behind those closed doors?
I already dealt with that earlier. You may remember by saying I thought it was Bannon getting to the president. We got a letter from somebody saying, "Well, people inside the White House say that Bannon's not on the list." But I think that's what happened. I think Bannon reminded the president of how he got elected if he wants to get elected again. I think that's what happened.
But what is it?
The reporting was that he spent a lot of time watching TV.
Well, and because his wife and his son weren't there,
away,
and he had nothing to do but watch TV.
And his daughter's away on vacation, and so he spent a lot of time watching TV. I don't know the facts. But
okay, but I'm more interested in what got him to do the statement on Monday. Like, who got
probably
to him
Kelly.
To do that?
Kelly.
We used to have a dean at New Paltz, and we always assumed that the last person in the room was the one who was going to win. In other words, you've all known people like that. You know, you go to the guy and you say, he says, good, you're so long. And then the next guy comes and takes the opposite.
Oh, don't do that,
right. So who is the last guy in the room is the question.
Well, that may be true, but I think that there are people who look at it as their obligation to serve the president and try to rescue this presidency and keep the need. Keep the nation on track and not have it completely fall apart. And I think Kelly is among them. And it's questionable now whether his presence only makes it worse by giving some legitimacy to the president or what. And I think you're right, Alan. I think Bannon has convinced Trump that go to the base, stick with the base. You're going to win with the base. And this is his last-ditch effort to try to do just that. And the results will be what the polls say. And you guys were just predicting perhaps his numbers will go up. And if they go up, that's a pretty tragically sad thing. But if enough people talk about this and use this as an opportunity to talk thoughtfully about what is going on in our society, it could have a reverse effect, and this could be the end of Trump.
Well, Mike, as you know, I've been right many times in my predictions, and my prediction here is that Mike's making faces. They're not going up, they're going down. They're going to continue to go down.
I think you're right. I agree. I'll be very surprised.
Right.
Well, You know, if his performance yesterday results in more Americans giving him approval, higher approval ratings, whatever, that's a tragedy. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible tragedy.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Kathleen says, panel, I've lost all hope. Are we witnessing the rise of a new Nazi party capable of taking over the GOP in the name of conservatism?
Well, that's up to all of us.
It's a fascinating question.
Really, I mean, it's really up to all of us to, just as people spoke out against the changes that they wanted to make in health care, again, this is kind of a false equivalency, but it's up to us what happens to our country now. I mean, it's what Donald Trump said and did yesterday might be shocking, but it's not at all a surprise, as Donna was saying. This is what he said during the campaign. This is who he is. This is his history. But he is fomenting this hate in our country. And a leader can either work to dissipate that hate, or they can work to try to foment and use it. And it's all up to, he's trying to foment it, and we have to be voices against it. That's why I wonder where Congressman Faso and people like that are on this issue.
Representatives.
Where are leaders?
All right, here we go. Julie says, good morning, panel. Thank you for realigning my sanity each morning. To further explain the term dog whistle, like its name, it may only be heard by those whose ears are attuned.
Exactly right. Perfect.
When Trump says in a national address, we write symphonies, that may sound benign to us. But to the racists, it is a clear whistle, since one of their tenets is the supposed superiority of white composers. We need to start attuning our ears as well.
Good letter, thank
that
you.
That is a good letter.
Yes.
Gina says, I fail to see how rich white frat boys are oppressed. That's a fast letter. And
there are working class white men who aren't getting into college or have to pay.
Right.
It's usually not because of their race.
Right. Yeah.
I agree.
What I'm saying is that there are people who if you have a leader who says, well, that's because minorities are getting, you know, a better deal.
It's not because blacks are oppressing them.
Right, right. Yes. Then that's the problem. That's the problem when you have a leader of the United States of America who's fomenting these false ideas as opposed to trying to help understand and grow the economy for everyone.
Go ahead, Ellen.
I appreciate your call for stories from survivors and veterans. You did that, Teresa.
I think it's so important.
But as a Jew, these stories have been present in my whole life and are part of the fabric of who I am. I think part of the problem is that you are calling for these stories now. You want to hear them now. I've been hearing these stories since the day I was born. To borrow a term from popular culture, everyone needs to become more woke.
Well, I think that what I'm concerned about is...
I don't think it's ever too late to hear those stories.
Are there groups of people who don't remember the stories, who haven't heard, who've lost
new
sight
generations.
Of... New generations.
Our
who
education
don't know.
System is not not helping with this. So I really sympathize with that, you know, that letter. But I also think that, when you get outside of the population, that information is not as well known. And that's why we do have to kind of repeat these things.
I was reminded of this. I was looking at the Birmingham, Alabama newspaper last night because there was the U.S. Senate primary there. And there was a story about the person who was the Holocaust Memorial Education Center there. And she was out talking and about the training they do with teachers. And now they're going to do more given what's going on. Because we have to, the whole groups of people who don't understand what this is all about.
All right, lightning round, Alan.
Okay.
Lightning round.
Here we go. Bill says, white nationalists have ruled this country from the day President Obama was sworn in. And Daniel says, good morning, panel. How do we reconcile when half the population doesn't approve of democracy itself? When half the population wants a strongman dictator such as Putin? When Trump's poll numbers are low, not because he's a racist, but because he's a buffoon? Barbara says, as a never-been-married white woman of 70, I am surprised and sometimes disturbed when I see white women being so strongly influenced by their husbands. After many years of marriage to a strongly opinionated, maybe bigoted man...
Okay, a little too much information here.
I think we're getting a lot of this story, aren't we?
Yeah. It's easy to see how a woman can lose her identity and her own opinions. She may not even want to go against her husband in the privacy of the voting booth. Sad. Parker says, I agree it's a problem with 52% of white women voted for Trump. But what about the 63% of white men who did?
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's another problem.
Yes.
Yeah. When we say more white women voted for him without saying more than what, we let people fill in the second half of the comparison. More than should have? Yes. More than expected? Maybe. More than men? Nope. We can't give white men a pass either.
That's a good letter.
Even
if, I agree.
Even if it was expected.
Thank you.
Jim says, the Marines are saying the tweet was directed at a former Marine recruiter who was at the rally. Dylan Hopper served from 2006 to January 2017 and was a member of Vanguard America. I don't see how we'll ever see the U.S. Marine Corps can't commandant diss the POTUS in public. One of the first rules taught in boot camp, if you can't respect the man, you still respect the rank or office. Keep on keeping on, from Jim. Mishka says, dear panel, you asked for a response from a Holocaust survivor. My parents aren't around to speak for themselves, but I know how they would have reacted with great despair. We went through this once and thought it was safe here. As it happens, Monday night was a summer meeting of our 2G group, Children of Holocaust Survivors. The discussion reflected total disgust and fear on our part, and looking ahead for the safety of our children, all Jews and all non-white Americans. Mishka.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mishka.
Yes. Okay. Roundtable, you are so blinkered by your obvious abhorrence of Trump that you miss reality. What about the racism of Black Lives Matter? The organized gangs.
I'd like to speak to that.
Okay. The organized gangs that rioted in Ferguson, Baltimore, Berkeley, and Charlottesville, and the shooting of Republican congressmen in Virginia. These are all manifestations of left-wing violence. How can you miss them? And that's from Roger. Go ahead, Don.
This is one of those other false equivalencies, right? Black Lives Matter, if you look on their website, you'll see the language that they use, their beliefs, what they stand for. They use words like affirming and empathy and loving engagement. If you go to the KKK or other alt-right groups, you don't see that. What you see is race superiority, racism, and anti-immigrant, anti-black, anti-Jewish. You see hate.
And a cleansing.
And you see violence, because we cannot forget that the KKK was born out of violence. It was a violent group. It continues to be violent, and so do the neo-Nazi groups. Black Lives Matter is simply a very loose organization of people who are trying to remind the American people that black lives matter. Also matter. Now, in many of the protests that have gone on around Black Lives Matter, we see some violence. We've seen police use extraordinary force against black protesters. We didn't see any of that in Charlottesville. None of that. So to make that argument is, I think, really problematic. And the right is doing it, and I think they're having some effect.
But I think we do have to separate, which I think we said is great about Black Lives Matter. There is a separate group of anarchists, self-described anarchists on the left, who they showed up in Berkeley. They showed up in a one block at the during the
it's anti-fascist,
right?
And
that's separate from Black.
That's right. And, that is absolutely right.
And we have to condemn the violence that they engage in.
Right, but they were also, my understanding of their role in Charlottesville was that they were actually putting a protective arm around the clergy, for example. So Cornel West said, if it weren't for the anarchists and the Antifa, there was a group of clergy, peaceful pacifists, who were going to be attacked. So I do, you know, it's just not the same. It's not the same.
I think Cornel West, yes, made that. I saw him last night, and boy, go him, by the way. But he was talking about yes, it was violence, but it was also a protective nature of what they were doing. I mean,
to look at the ideology,
right?
You really have to look at the ideology between Black Lives Matter and the KKK.
Right.
What do they stand for? Black Lives Matter is not a black superiority organization calling for the killing and eradicating of the white race. It simply is not.
But
it is just reminding people that Black Lives Matter, and that we need to be reminded is kind of a tragic reality, and it's shameful, but we do need to be reminded.
We're going to hold it there.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, Mike, Teresa, thank you. Donna, wow. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. Wow.
A very impressive debut. Thank you very much for for being with us. It's a great pleasure. Hopefully you will. I won't put you on the spot, but I do hope you come back and return and be with us again. We'd love to have you. My thanks to everybody. Keep the letters coming. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.